This is the Bartholomew Town Podcast.
For daily content, follow Bartholomew Town on Instagram and TikTok. Bartholomew Town is presented in part by the University of Rhode Island Online, who offer a wide array of programs. Visit uri.edu/online or give them a call at 401-874-5280. That's uri.edu/online or call 401-874-5280. As Rhode Island's first ever member-owned credit union, Navigant Credit Union has been a staple in the local business community for more than 108 years. Today, Navigant is a $3.4 billion institution serving more than 136,000 members across 25 physical branch locations. But since its founding in 1915, the mission has never changed. Navigant Credit Union's team of financial professionals have remained committed to improving the financial well-being of the families, businesses, and communities they serve across Rhode Island. Learn more at NavigantCU.org.
Ken Block, he's a two-time gubernatorial candidate. He's somebody that is really on the national stage now because of his new book. He's an entrepreneur. He's a data analyst expert, and he's somebody who's been an advocate for good government through Watchdog RI for years, and had a chance to take a look at some of the documentation about the Washington Bridge. Some of it was released to the media, some of it was released to sources, and I'm not sure maybe in other places. But after taking a look at this material, it became clear to Ken, and his positions have been pretty well known, that at minimum, the state of Rhode Island knew about the issues with the Washington Bridge as early as 2012. He joins us this morning to talk about that and some action that he's taking, raising money to install billboard signs that are critical of the state's response. Good morning, Ken. Thanks for the time.
Good morning, Bill. Thanks for having me.
When did you first start getting interested in the Washington Bridge debacle?
From day zero. The fact that the bridge had to be shut down under emergency circumstances and that it was a surprise to the Department of Transportation that this needed to happen. That is indicative of a state agency that is malfunctioning in a horrific way. People's lives were jeopardized. And one of the things that we need to know is how this was possible and why it wasn't caught.
I completely agree. I mean, from day one, literally from day one of this operation, it was completely obvious that there was something awry. And as time moved along, I kept saying over and over again, as did others, that there's no way that a bridge suddenly and without any warning and without any anticipation in the middle of December, after passing inspection in July, all of a sudden had a critical failure that required that westbound span to be closed. No chance that story was true. The young engineer, all that, obviously an exaggeration. And then what came to be the next story was how the response was being managed. And we saw the unbelievable traffic jams on the westbound side. Now that's been resolved, but has shifted to the eastbound span, which is, I mean, it's an unbelievable traffic jam every single day when I go by it on my way home from WPRO. So in a way to, I don't want to say goad, but sort of, put some pressure or just express dissatisfaction with state government, you've been raising money and in fact have installed an electronic rotating billboard that's critical of the state's response. One of them says they knew in 2012. How did you come to make that claim that the state knew about the bridge in 2012?
Yeah, one of the documents that eventually leaked out of the DOT was the results of an engineering study in 2012 that told the DOT that heavy trucks should be immediately banned from the bridge. DOT's response in 2013 in the form of a memo was, we're not going to do that right now. And then the request to ban heavy trucks from the bridge was reiterated in another report that the DOT received from its engineers, its contracted engineers in 2015. So they knew in 2012 that this bridge was deficient enough that heavy trucks should have been banned from it, yet they didn't take any action. The DOT knew this bridge was in trouble and allowed this troubled bridge to continue handling all traffic that came across it, literally until the day they had to shut it down in an emergency because it was ready to fall down.
What is becoming clear to a lot of people as well is that this is something that has really an unknown day one in terms of when the project actually, or when the bridge actually became an issue. There have been some arguments made that from Jump Street, it was a problem because of the design flaws of the bridge, which basically the summary is that it's hard to inspect a bridge design the way that this one was. At the same time, there's documentation that shows that contractors performed either inspections or just maintenance work and were able to see these deficiencies and made that recommendation in 2012. As you said, there have been subsequent recommendations or flags that have been raised about the condition of the bridge from 2012 and beyond. So this runs through several different administrations. This is a Chafee issue, a Raimondo issue, and now it's a McKee issue. How much, from the standpoint of the Department of Transportation and from your seat as someone who's analyzed these documents and is just a citizen, how shocking is it that the Department of Transportation seems to be in a position right now where they don't even entertain the notion, at least maybe beyond just a radio hit with Gene Valicente here and there, that they could be responsible for this?
Yeah, the lack of accountability, the lack of anybody in state government to take responsibility for what happened here is one of the two primary motivators for why these billboards are running right now. We need accountability, and I don't believe that the DOT itself is capable of delivering that accountability. That accountability needs to come from outside the DOT. It should come from the governor's office. And Governor McKee, from day zero, has expressed his strong position that he's not interested in accountability from within the DOT. Worse has been the tone deafness of the governor's office, of the Department of Transportation, to what the impact of this bridge closure has meant to businesses in Providence, to commuters who need to get to their jobs from either direction across the bridge. Even yesterday, as Governor McKee reacted to the billboard, his response, and the only word I can use here is tone deaf, was absolutely tone deaf. His response basically said, he didn't mention me by name, but he absolutely had this message targeted at me. He said, well, and I'm paraphrasing, and Block is referring to something that happened months ago. It's a waste of money for him to talk about this now. That's not the case. Yes, the initial incident happened months ago, but even today, we have no answers about accountability. There's an RFP that's been released, which is a government procuring mechanism. They're asking potential vendors to bid on replacing the bridge, but the state hasn't told those vendors whether or not the cement that's buried in the river is capable of supporting a newly built bridge. And all of that infrastructure in the water is at least 60 years old. So a crucial question needs to be answered. That is that substructure up to supporting a $500 million investment that's intended to last 100 years? Can you build a 100-year bridge on 60-year-old substructure? And what's even worse about all of this, besides the state not telling the vendors whether or not that substructure can support it, the state sent divers into the water to assess that substructure. And so not only has the state failed to tell the public what the results of that assessment were, they're not telling their vendors who are going to bid on the project what the results of that work was. It's absolutely wrong. It is absolutely reckless. And the state can't possibly expect bids that are going to be frugal with taxpayer money when the people doing the bidding have to account for a vast unknown. If the substructure has to be replaced, it could double the cost of the project, especially because the other thing the state hasn't said is whether or not the river bottom is loaded with toxic debris from hundreds of years of industrial activity.
Right.
And I'm pretty confident the answer is yes, the sediment in the river is in fact toxic. And so how can you bid on a project and not risk putting your own company into bankruptcy without putting a huge slush factor into your bid, hundreds of millions of dollars? That's what the contractors need to do. But the state knows the answer to these questions, and they haven't provided it. It is absolutely galling to me how the state has handled every inch of travel of this catastrophe from day zero to where we are right now. That's why the billboards are up. That's why they have to remain up. And honestly, you said you were struggling with the word goad. I'll take the word goad. We are goading government to do better than what they've done right now. They're still in cover up is probably not the right word to use here, but they are still absolutely dragging their feet in providing the answers that we all need right now. And it's time for that to stop.
Yeah. Well, when you say the toxic materials, that is a huge unknown, especially if, as I understand it, the burden of removing, of mitigating those toxic materials would actually fall upon the contractor who bids and is awarded that project. Similarly, the substructure, based on the nature of the post-tensioning system, and I'm not an engineer, and I know you're not either, so we don't have to necessarily go down that rabbit hole. But from a layman's perspective, just a cursory understanding, there's a chance that that substructure, being as old as it is, if it requires replacement, would actually require not only the westbound to be demolished, but also the eastbound. That is still a possibility, and we don't know. And I think that it's completely unbelievable that this process hasn't been laid out for the public to see. And again, I understand there's confidential material and there are elements that can't be immediately pushed to the public. But I would completely agree that it is extremely frustrating for folks, especially if you have to drive over that thing every day. And now the eastbound span, it's unbelievable. I don't know what happened. I don't know what's going on, but the eastbound side has become a nightmare at rush hour. It's shocking.
It's shocking and it's wrong. How, if the state were to reveal whether or not there's toxicity in the mud, that's not confidential information. That is absolutely publicly necessary information because it impacts all of Narragansett Bay and impacts all of our quality of life. And I can't imagine a scenario where that piece of data, making it public, how that could impact any kind of confidentiality necessary to holding contractors responsible for things they did or didn't do over the decades with the bridge, unless there was a contract to mitigate the toxicity in the mud, and I'm sure there wasn't. There's no reason they can't release that piece of it. But more importantly, the assessment of the substructure and whether it's up to the task of supporting a new bridge, we cannot reasonably expect contractors to bid on this project without knowing the answer to that. And because the state commissioned the study, the state knows the answer to that, and the state must produce that information as part of the bid, and therefore it has to be part of the public conversation. The public needs to know what the contractors are being asked to bid on. The contractors need to know whether or not the substructure is up to the task or not. And I fail to see how keeping that private is helpful in any way, shape, or form. The state is not going to extract from its contractors nearly enough money to make a dent in what it's going to take to rebuild this bridge. And to hold back this information in service of acquiring a couple of million dollars from the contractors is silly and foolish. And I believe it's just a ready excuse for the DOT and the governor's office not to provide this necessary data to all of us. I'm tired of the games. I'm tired of the tone deafness. I'm tired, and I do state contracting. I have bid on contracts. I've won big state contracts over my career. I know how to read RFPs. I understand the risks that come along with RFPs that aren't very specific about exactly what you need to do. And I've never been on a project this big, but I know that these bridge contractors have. And this particular RFP is going to cause most bridge contractors to run as far away from it as they can, because how can you bid on something with so many unknowns and with the federal eyes that are on it, with the state eyes that are on it, with the infamy that this bridge has already garnered nationwide for just the sheer mess that this thing is right now? We've got to get our act together, and we need the transparency. It's absolutely not there. It's so frustrating, and so many people here in the East Bay are just done. They're totally done with how this thing has been handled.
Yeah, I would extend that to Providence as well, where you see traffic backups in parts of the city and going from west to east, as I do each and every day. Again, it's way better driving west than it was. Pardon me, it's way better. Yeah, it's way better driving west back into Providence at rush hour than it was months ago. That's actually been significantly improved, arguably even better than before the closure of the bridge. Eastbound, it's a major problem. And there's a lot of unknowns, like you said, that are just extremely frustrating, I think, for the taxpayer, for anybody. I mean, it doesn't make any difference. You look at this and you're confused and annoyed. Ken Block, he's raising money for billboards. You'll see them. There's already one going. Maybe we'll see more. Thanks for your time this morning.
Bill, thank you so much.